Great experiences build great leaders. Great leaders build great teams. This is Building Great Sales Teams.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to Building Great Sales Teams. You know what it is? We've got another expert on the show today. Today we have Casey Luft. He is the founder and CEO of Clientrick. You got to say it for me. I should have figured this out before the call. How do you say it?
Oh, good. Clientrick. Clientrick. Just combining client and centric. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I just automatically said it when I saw it. Clientrick.
There's CRM so many people consulting. That do that.
Absolutely. They focus on implementing customized technology solutions for roofers based on the SoHo software suite. The reason I brought Casey on is one, I do not like SoHo. So I would love for him to teach us some stuff about it so I can come around to it for sure. You know, I'm mainly in Go High Level all the time. I know that SoHo can do some amazing things. One of my first clients actually operated in SoHo, so I had to figure it out fast. But also, we connected on social media and you posted about what you call the granny test, which is a simplistic one-page document outlining your how your business operates. It's so simple, your grandma can understand it. And I think so much of us coaches, consultants, you know, B2B businesses have a hard time explaining our business. And so can you walk us through what the granny test is?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of stole it from some of the other, I think it's the SaaS models that are out there that kind of create, you know, the mom test, the granny test, all that kind of stuff. But my idea here is that it's a little bit different, but at the end of the day, most businesses do not have a succinct way to explain their business, whether that's to while you're onboarding new employees, whether that's explaining to, you know, your friends, your family, your grandma. Very few people actually understand what you do. And I think it's super important to keep in the back of your mind that, you know, if you can't simply and succinctly say what you do and how you do it, how can you expect other people to understand what you're doing and how you're doing it and what your purpose is? And so I think that's kind of where that motivation came from, to kind of get people to think about, do I have a document? Do I have my processes mapped out in a clear visual representation that anyone could understand, regardless of background?
I couldn't agree more. You know, it starts at a very basic level with the elevator pitch, you know, and that you typically learn that when you're a salesperson. But when you're running the whole company and all the different avenues and everything in the divisions and all that, it gets incredibly hard at that point to communicate that, right? And so I would say the hardest part about it is like in my case, right? I build sales programs. That part of the marketing outside of the podcast, which is building great sales teams, which is right in sync with it, right? Is very easy to figure out. But there's this evolution that happens with my clients where it's building sales programs, it's operating as a fractional CSO for them, and eventually a fractional integrator. There's this ascension model that kind of happens. Now, some people need a fractional integrator, but they don't need a sales program. Or some people need a fractional CSO, but they don't need that sales program yet. So how do you recommend, you know, communicating that using the granny test, but not overcomplicating what you do at the same time?
Absolutely. I think it comes down to kind of, if you were to look at the flow diagram, kind of mapping out your processes from start to finish. You know, if you have a lead that comes in, what is the next question you ask them? You're going to send them maybe a form, what they're actually looking for. Well, that form is then going to dictate where they go in your funnel. Do they need, you know, sales training? Do they need a fractional integrator? Things like that. So that's going to then dictate, as you kind of build out this diagram, you can build out these different flows that anyone can understand super easily. And it really depends on what those inputs are. And then you can figure out where those outputs go to.
All right. There's an interesting question. So I get a lead in, and it happens often because, you know, I speak, I am a guest on podcasts, you know, I go to different mastermind events and stuff like that. And people are just connects with me because they like me, right? I'm the attractive character. And so they connect with me for that reason. They know, okay, Doug does sales programs, maybe Doug has a podcast, you know, maybe I want to get on his podcast, whatever the case is. And so they may fill out a web form or they may download one of my resources. And so at what point, like, let's just say they fall off after that. We don't connect them on a discovery call for whatever reason. They don't schedule, they don't book, they don't purchase a course or anything like that. Should I just be sending them, when it comes to nurture, should I be nurturing that initial relationship, or should I be sending them something specific based on the web form that they originally filled out that said that what they need? Should I be nurturing that particular thing they need, or should I be staying top of mind just overall everything that's going on in my world?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think it might depend a little bit on what they originally came to you for. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're looking for a fractional integrator, obviously they are looking for someone to help them, you know, implement the ideas and the visions that they have. And so it sounds like maybe they don't have someone who could do that because they've fallen off the bandwagon, or else maybe they would have someone that's gotten back to you already, you know, like,
yeah.
So I think it depends on kind of what they're looking for. But I'd say always following up with someone with their original request. But I think there's an additional thing here where you can also stay top of mind. A lot of my clients throw out like meme newsletters and things like that, where you do something fun, kind of brings you top of mind, but also is just kind of like a little bit more engaging, maybe a little less serious. So you could have two different funnels potentially, one that kind of keeps you front of mind and one that kind of nurtures that original request when they came in. Absolutely.
Do you run them at the same time? And are you able to set them up to where you're not sending them two emails in one day every week?
Absolutely. Like, you can, there's a lot of marketing automation systems that are out there. So you can set people up with different cadences, with different funnels. I'm sure you're plenty aware. I know Go High Level is pretty good at that. And so you could absolutely have multiple funnels and making sure they're not getting, you know, communicate with too frequently. And you could set up different funnels if you truly want to do that. The question is, like, is that going to drive someone away? Is that going to annoy someone? So you do have to be careful about that. And it really depends on the offering and where you're at and how serious they are too. You know, you could, maybe if you've never talked to them again, maybe it's just a fun, lighthearted conversation. And then maybe you pick it up in, you know, 3 months and you put them into a follow-up campaign, a nurture bucket that, you know, goes through their original request. Hey, Doug, I see that you submitted this thing, you know, 3 months ago. I just want to follow up and see how important it is to you still. Were you able to find your integrator? Whatever it is, right? So there's plenty of different ways to do that.
When it comes to home service companies, or in your case, our conversation started because of roofing companies, you know, there's kind of two ways that roofers get leads, right? There's a storm, they go to the storm, they run ads, they go to door to door. It's more of an event-based contact that's happening. Or the other way, they're already marketing, they're already top of mind in that market, that's their market, and then the storm happens or an event happens that the consumer needs a new roof. And so based on those two ways, you know, is there a certain follow-up that you like to do based on that? Because we do have a lot of roofers that listen to the show, so I'm sure they could benefit from understanding, hey, once I knocked on the door and I got the client information, but I didn't get the claim, what should I be sending them after that? What's worked really well?
Yeah, I think, I mean, realistically, homeowners are probably getting multiple quotes at that point. And so you have to really, you have to make sure that you're making an impression while you're there. Making sure that, you know, they feel heard, that you're going to, you know, walk them through the process from start to finish. And ideally, before you leave, you should be getting a contingency agreement signed. So making sure that, you know, your company is kind of top of mind before you leave the house. And I think that's an important aspect. But for following up, I think it depends on, like you said, is this an insurance claim, or is this just kind of door knocking in the area? Direct mailers are always a good thing. You know, putting up yard signs around the neighborhood, all that good stuff. You can only annoy people so much, right? Before they just, you know, say, piss off, get out of here, I'm tired of this. So you also don't want to overdo it, but at the same time, you had some interest. So you got to follow up with them. You have to email them, text message them, you know, show them who you are as a company. If you have a drip campaign that showcases who your company is, your company values, you know, that kind of pushes this out into a marketing automation funnel, that's going to put you miles above your competition. Just no one seems to do that. And so it's the little things like that that could put you above and beyond. And maybe don't just focus on trying to get the sale, focus on providing value. And I think that's the most important thing. I'm a very value first individual. And I think the more value first people that are out there, I believe success comes with value. And the more value you can provide, the more success you are going to have.
I love that, because a lot of the sales programs that I'm building right now are in roofing companies. You know, the first page in the book that they hand the client when they're about to set up, start making the claim or whatever the case, the first page is our company values. You know, the second page is our story. And, yeah. And you see a lot more of that happening on the websites and stuff like that too, because the roofing's gotten very competitive. So how are you going to differentiate yourself? And if your nurture campaign includes those stories in there, along with practical ways that they can, you know, get the roof replaced, or, you know, walk them through the insurance process, or the likelihood of their claim getting denied or approved, you know, these little tidbits that homeowners need to be aware of, but also telling your company story, I think it's going to separate you from the competition, you know, versus them just calling and say, hey, did you file your claim yet? Let's get your claim filed. That type of stuff. That's very, like you said, transaction based.
Absolutely. 100%. So it's just those little things that you can do to kind of change that experience for the homeowner. Obviously the more people that start to do this, the trickier it's going to be to actually stand out. So what's the next thing, you know, like what's the next evolution of all of this? So it'll be really interesting to see what that looks like, but I have a feeling that's going to be a lot more technology based and make the transaction a lot easier for people. I have a feeling that's where it's going to be going next.
100%. Okay. So you got your start with a bachelor's degree in physics, and then you're a self-taught data engineer. How do you go from physics to data engineering to Zoho CRMs, technology and process mapping? I mean, it's kind of
wild ride, right?
All nerdy stuff. Okay. So like, I can see the relation, but how did that evolution happen?
Yeah, absolutely. So I finished university with, let's say, mediocre grades, right? So a bachelor's of physics, you can't really do much with after that. It's just a piece of paper. It was kind of the unfortunate something I didn't realize coming out of university was that no one cares. No one cares what is on that piece of paper at the end of the day, unless you're an engineering degree or, you know, something like that that's actually applied. No one really cares. So it was ultimately, I either need to go back to school and improve my grades and get a master's, PhD, which I was not keen on, or just go into the world and start figuring it out on my own. So that's kind of what I did. Bummed around for a while and ended up slowly teaching myself. And through the degree, I did learn how to program, but continually taught myself how to utilize these languages and build data pipelines and manage data. And then I got interested in Zoho very randomly. I came across it and I was doing some freelance work on Upwork, helping people with their data pipelines and the data engineering side of things. And I came across Zoho and I fell in love with it because of the way they structured the system. And it was exactly what I was looking for my clients. Business owners who are struggling to really set proper data systems in place. And then I come to Zoho and it has the architecture, it has the databases. Now, a lot of people in this industry and more of the home service-based industries don't typically think of it like this, but your business runs on data. And if it is not structured properly, you are not going to be successful. And that's it at the end of the day. You know, those businesses that are still running on Excel spreadsheets are struggling. I'm sure there's going to be some people who would argue with that. And I'm sure over the last 15 or 20 years, they have done amazing with it. But imagine what you could have if you had, you know, a souped up system. And so this is where kind of Zoho came into the picture, because it had all of that. It had the business intelligence for me to be able to recommend to my clients as a data engineer to build the data pipelines, to create the dashboards, fully customize everything that I wanted to for them. And so I just kind of fell in love with it. And that's really where I took it to the next level for a lot of my clients. And that's what we continue to do in the roofing space. So we help larger roofing companies, typically 5 million plus in revenue, mm-hmm. take advantage of you know, customizing Zoho's system. Now, if you aren't familiar with Zoho, it is very similar to HubSpot or Salesforce. I'm sure you're probably familiar with one of those two. So the way I like to explain it is Salesforce is kind of like iOS, and you have Zoho, which is more like Android. So still super powerful, does everything that you want, but maybe just a little less polished.
No, I would agree with that assessment. And if we were to bring in like HubSpot, you know, would be kind of like the lesser version of Zoho or Salesforce, and then go high levels like the entry level, the, you know, hey, I'm a brand new roofer, I started my own company, and this is like very easy to use, you know?
Yeah.
And so
absolutely,
but go you're absolutely
very
right.
Good on the user interface. Like it makes it really easy to use, which I love. And I wish other tools had that kind of mindset.
But yeah, it's true. Once you get to 5 million, you know, and once you start, hey, I need a recruiting pipeline, and I need to understand, you know, my margins on these materials and everything. And then I need I need dashboards, you know. That's where I feel like when I was using Zoho, because I've used it for a pool installation company and a turf installation company. And the turf installation was over 12 million, you know. The pool installation was 1 to 2 million or something like that. So they were a little early in their use of it. But they had used it with other companies before, so they were familiar with it. And so I found it to be, you know, like with another company that I'm using Go High Level with right now, we also use Google Sheets and Looker Studio. We also use Make and Monday. You know what I'm saying? So we're piecing all these systems together. And I know that Zoho, if you start your foundation in Zoho, it can do kind of all of those things together, except for maybe some of the automation pieces, but you'd be more keen to that. And so there's definitely evolutions in here that we're talking about, you know, and I've never been the guy that's been like, oh, Go High Level is the only thing you need. And, you know, I'm not an agency guy. No, I need to understand it because it's part of sales programs, you know, but absolutely. I have to be universal and be able to plug a sales program into any CRM that my client's already using. So that's a big part of it. What do you think the gap needs to be bridged for roofers that are over 5 million? Where can they immediately find another million in their data? Where do you see that happening?
I would say, within the data itself, it's just the contacts that you have and the people that you have, and using that to leverage, using those contacts in there to leverage their networks. So using other people's networks. Now, OPM is typically in the real estate investing industry for other people's money, right? But you could use OPN for other people's networks. So leverage as a $5 million company, you have a decent amount of people, contacts you've made. Why not kind of push that out? Why not push new campaigns out to people like that? So I think within that, you have a ton of valuable data that could be leveraged. For utilizing the information that you already have, and then basically understanding, you know, who's a good fit. I think there's a lot of roofers don't take advantage of the data that they do have available, the KPIs. I think that's still something, you know, I'm not a business person by trade. I don't have a business degree. So I'm still learning this as running my own company. I'm still learning all the KPIs that I need to learn as well. Yeah. Right. So, you know, these people that are running these businesses who don't have that business background as well are going through the same thing. What can I, you know, look at to determine the health of my business? So just monitoring that more closely using that data, I think is super, super important.
It's a big part of, you know, a sales program build is understanding, okay, what are like the four or the five most important KPIs that move the needle in sales, you know? And for most roofers, you can't get around it. It's doors knocked, you know, especially if they're more doing more insurance work and they're doing more storm work and stuff like that. Like at the end of the day, that's a KPI that a salesperson is never going to be able to get past. And it's because it's controllable, you know? And so when you look at those things in your business and you look at all the different ways that you can bring in income, you know, in my mind, you've got the lead generation is the most important one because that's scalable up or down. But if you've been doing lead generation enough, and I'm starting to laugh over here because I pulled up your website, and this is hilarious for you guys that are watching on YouTube. I got to show you this, and he just totally like distracted me with this. It's got the Dwight. Oh, you're killing me. It's so awesome. There we go. The Dwight chat here. Like, I'm a huge Office fan. And so the logo and everything being like Dwight is fantastic. I love it. I love it so much.
Well, it's funny because there's been a few people that have commented and they said, hey, like, you spelt Dwight wrong. And I was like, actually, no, that was a conscious decision just on the off chance someone sees that. And like, there's just Dwight. Too many similarities.
What's the episode where they talk, it's Dwight, right?
I don't remember that.
It's a line from one of the episodes, right?
I think so. Yeah. I don't remember which one.
Like, somebody spells his name wrong or something like that. Anyways, greetings, mere mortal, and welcome to the digital realm. I'm Dwight, assistant to the regional manager. I love it. A superior presence. Like, this doesn't happen often, guys. This just pulled me off my podcast game right now. I had to point this out. And for anybody that knows me, I don't talk about a lot of the podcast, but me and my wife have seen The Office like 13 times over. Like, that's when we first started dating, that's how we bonded with The Office.
That's awesome,
though. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so going back to it.
One more quick anecdote. We were doing some recruiting over this past week for a new project manager, and two of our interviewees commented on the chatbot on Dwight. They're like, I absolutely love this. Like, this is a company I want to work for. And so just like as a fun note, just injecting some of that, you know, that fun and that uniqueness as to who we are, and like telling the world we don't take ourselves too seriously, but like, we take ourselves seriously enough, but we're going to have some fun with it along the way. So that just kind of allowed us to stand out a little bit more to those candidates as well. So if there's anything like that you can inject into your business to help with the recruiting process, I think that just makes it a little bit more fun for everyone.
Or even the prospecting process too. I mean, if you can make it fun for somebody to be sold, you know what I'm saying? Which obviously a lot of that has to do with personality, building rapport, you know, understanding, you know, what they enjoy and letting them talk about themselves, all those things that we talk about on the show all the time. Okay. So again, going and finding that extra million, your first suggestion was using your client network, right? And so a lot of times I build sales flows out, and the sales flow is more like, hey, this is, and it's very much what you guys do, but it's just, it's from the salesperson point of view, understanding, okay, what are my stages? Yep. You know, and basically when you look at a sales flow and it basically says like installation SOPs, I'm not worried about that. That's the install side. You know, I just need to know that it happens at this point, right? So once the installation happens, you know, I typically go back to the CRM is the next stage that's going to execute the next stage of the customer experience. And they're going to start a nurture campaign that is going to be, okay, if there's any other work that the company can do for them, it's going to nurture that. It's also a campaign that's asking for referrals, and it's a campaign that's asking for testimonials, you know, obviously at different times, spaced out, you know, so they don't get irritated with the volume or anything. Is that something that you feel like a lot of roofing companies are missing, to where when they're going and asking for those referrals, they're using the client's network, like you talked about, other people's network, right? OPN.
Yeah.
So are you guys finding you're bridging a lot of those gaps that these companies have currently using those type of nurture campaigns?
Yeah, I would say it's extremely helpful. Most businesses overlook it, we found, or at least, you know, like you said, they're kind of unsure what to do. And so just getting a second set of eyes on it. And that's a lot of what we do when we're kind of designing a new CRM, a new system for our clients. It's really, honestly, just taking a look at what you have already and kind of poking some holes in it, asking some questions. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Can this be done better? Can this be done more efficiently? You know, just getting a second set of eyes on it. And this is kind of where I think, you know, our conversation was originally stemmed from was, I wasn't even talking about CRMs. I was talking about processes. Like, before you implement anything, you need to have it kind of drawn out on a piece of paper. And in this case, we use a tool called Miro. I think you said you maybe use Lucidchart or something like that, but all these tools are the same. And what you do is you map it out. You see it. You see a representation of it. You pass it off to one of your team members. Like, hey, you know, does this look good? Can we poke holes in this? You walk through the process. You ask questions. Very few people actually do that. And so absolutely, we see that being a huge benefit because a lot of people just don't know where to start. You know, anyone has the ability to map out what you already know, but most people from what we've come across just don't know where to start. And so just teaching people how to even, you know, take that first step is really important. And I think a lot of problems could be solved and a lot more solutions could be brought up by people just taking that first step and just laying it all out instead of getting, you know, up in your head and, you know, hitting the brakes up there. Just start putting it out on a piece of paper or something, thinking about it, drawing it out or writing it out, whatever those steps are, a checklist of items, you know, 1 through 10, you know, those are the things that will allow you to ask better questions instead of just kind of getting stuck in your head.
I love it because once you map out that process flow or that in my case for my clients, it's a sales flow. You can put a line through each stage, right? And then what you can do is, all right, if the customer gets from one stage to the other, that's a conversion rate, right? And so you can put conversion rates at the bottom of each of those lines. And this is a training that I do. I did at Roof Camp recently, which was a great event put on by David Taggart. And Jeff Berland. Oh, I can't remember his last name, but he owns like a $50 million roofing company. And then David Taggart's an up-and-comer in roofing. Right. So they put on this conference to have me speak at it. And basically I put out a sales flow and then I drop lines in between each of the stages and showed them like, okay, these are typical conversion rates between the stages. And once you understand this, you're not just a sales company anymore. You know what I mean? Now you're an actual business that is understanding, okay, what does it take to get my client from, you know, installed to referring customers to me, you know, which is like we talked about adding that extra million. I mean, and I feel like most companies are sitting on 15-20% increase in gross revenue if they just go after their existing client database or their existing leads that came in and nothing ever happened to them. If all they do is deploy, like you're talking about, follow-up campaigns on an existing database, and the goal is new sales from people that haven't bought yet, referrals, reviews, and client testimonials that will feed marketing. I mean, I feel like they could grab another 15-20% from just the existing contacts that they have in their database.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it could even be more if you focus on the referrals. Like, how do you create a way to make referrals? You could create a never-ending machine if you do referrals really, really well. And so just making sure that you're leveraging that and recognize the power it has. And I think a lot of people just go for that quick buck sometimes and don't necessarily put in the time. Like you said before, like door knocking is really easy, right? Well, it's really easy, but it also has, you know, it has defined metrics to it, but it's hard to scale. Whereas there are other opportunities that are out there that have a better scaling, a better return for that time and money that you're investing into that.
100%. And, you know, I think I'll say this last thing and then we'll pivot kind of to your story a little more, but I think the problem that we run into with the industry in general, and this is technology softwares as a service is, you know, a lot of the companies aren't qualifying their customers, but like you said it, 5 million or more. That's where you make your impact with roofing companies, right? And I love it when somebody says that because it shows me integrity right out of the gate. Because you could take somebody's money that's a startup and maybe they have some money from a previous business or they've invested and they're like, oh, I need a $20,000 CRM build, you know? But they've only made 5 sales. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That happens all too often. And
I agree.
It especially happens in like the mastermind or the Facebook groups and in that type of space where, all right, somebody gets a certain amount of celebrity as like the CRM goat or the CRM specialist or the, you know, software, the website, whatever the case is, and their prices go up and up and up. And then they continue to sell to this person that's doing $500,000 a year. Like, that's 5% of their revenue you just charged them, you know what I mean, to do a marketing build or whatever the case is. And so I think that's one of the things that our listeners should be looking for if they are going to hire technology in general, is like, all right, does this company have an actual avatar that they work with? Because they know they can move those needles versus I just made another sale.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree. So I think that you see it, you see it actually. Well, I've seen it happen quite often, unfortunately, with offshoring as well. People think that, you know, a lot of people in other countries will promise the world. And unfortunately, people believe these individuals because they don't know any better. They don't have any experience in the technology world. It's one of those industries that, and it's really frustrating because we deal with it often enough, and it stops some people from working with us because they're like, we just dropped how much money on this, and we're gonna have to drop that much more to work with you guys. Like, we can't do that. That sucks. I wish I could help you, but like, this is what we need in order to make this make sense. And so it ruins it because now they don't get the system that they wanted. They don't get the impact that they wanted. And then they're just falling behind more and more and more. And that's because some person somewhere knew that they were not a good fit and they were just going to take their money anyway. And that's a really frustrating part about being in this industry. And it sucks.
Well, I was talking about it with one of my, so I coach with Winrate Consulting. And our coaching director, me and him, were talking about it as like the CRM space is a very, it's easy to get into. There's not a lot of investment that has to happen because you're getting paid for your time to build it. And so a lot of people take advantage of that, we feel like. But anyways, let's pivot a little bit back to you. And so you worked with somebody else for a year in the same space or in a different space before you started your own business?
Yeah, in a different space. I was actually working as a data engineer for a high net worth insurance company. So that's kind of where I was at before building this out and thought I could do it better.
Man, that's interesting. I've been, you know, whenever I get some free time, I watch Suits. And so when you say high net worth insurance company, you're basically engineering the data that tells you when you're going to die, right?
Yes and no. So it was a smaller kind of mortgage broker, essentially. You're dealing with very high net worth folks who wanting to insure their homes. Their property. And I use that.
Okay, plural. That makes more sense. You know, I was thinking life nice insurance.
Cars.
Okay, I was gonna say I heard about the guy that
there was some of that too.
Yeah, about the guy that could like tell you when you were gonna die. Because, you know, he was so tuned into the life expectancy of all humans and based on what you eat and all these other things. Anyways, that was interesting.
Absolutely. It's crazy.
Okay. Speaking of that, like, you know, part of your story is you got diagnosed with testicular cancer at 27. And I can't even imagine getting that call, you know? And I think this is important to bring up because so much of building sales teams and being a great leader is going through these experiences and coming out the other side of them and being more empathetic when your team's going through them or when their family's going through them or whatever the case is, and providing context for these type of things. So can you walk us through what that was like? You did say that you got very lucky and just had one surgery and you didn't need any additional after that. Was that because you caught it early on or how did that work?
Yeah, no, it's a wild, wild story. For sure. And so for the men that are out there, always check your junk. Make sure you're doing that constantly. No, but one day it started hurting. It felt like I was kicked in the balls. And I was like, what the heck? Yeah. This is really weird. This is not normal. And so I ended up going to the doctor and they were quite adamant that it was a sexually transmitted infection. I was like, no, I can guarantee you that's not it. I'm in a very healthy relationship. Don't worry about that. It's not that.
Okay.
And at the end of the day,
thinking like, sure.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. Right. That's totally it. And then he scrolled through WebMD as I'm in the office. I'm like, oh my God, who am I talking with right now? They ended up getting me to go to a a radiologist and got scanned. And definitely cancer. And basically my one testicle was completely taken over by the cancer. Mm-hmm. It was just gone at that point.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting going through this experience because I sort of expected that, but you never really know what to expect. But I got the, the radiology appointment that was done, went back to work and just tried to like suffer through another work day. Right. And got a call saying from the doctor, hey, you need to come to the emergency room right away. We got to talk about this. And I was like, oh, that's not good. So that was like me freaking out entirely throughout that experience. And they said, this has got to come out. And thankfully, within 24 hours of that, it was removed. It was a quick surgery, 45 minutes. They were actually able to fit me in between other surgeries in the operating room. So I got very, very lucky. Wow. Things just worked out and got it removed right away. Afterwards, when they were kind of doing the pathology of it, they said there's, I think it was a 60% chance that it's going to come back. So not super early, but not super late. I had a pretty aggressive form of cancer. And so I didn't know what to expect from that. And so you're getting followed up with constantly. And in the back of your mind, throughout all of this experience, you're also thinking like, well, what's going to happen to me, right? And then you're constantly thinking in the back of your mind, what's going to happen to me? And so it kind of puts things into perspective when you go through an experience like that. And it's not fun by any stretch of the imagination, but I got very lucky and I haven't really talked about it that much before, but it's one of those things that I feel like I do need to talk more about it because 100%. It is a thing that impacts a lot of lives. And it's something that a lot of people need to know about. And a lot of people don't know what to expect from it. And so but for my personal story, it helped me be a better individual, helped me realize that I'm actually way more positive than I give myself credit for. I'm always the one that's looking on the brighter side, even though when I think I'm not, I really truly am. And it kind of like makes you face your mortality in a weird way, because you do have to think about that.
Yeah,
not a lot of people do at that age. And so it was tough, and it was tough for me and my wife, now my girlfriend at the time, but like we went through that together. And so it was a lot to take in. It absolutely was, but it put my journey into perspective for me. And sometimes I feel like I do still take my life for granted. I forget what that experience was like, but I kind of ground myself and going back into that experience and just being like, I gotta be thankful for where I am and what I have. And so always just being thankful that, you know, you get another day on this planet is, you know, the most important thing.
Yeah. I think, for me, I think these things happen for a reason. Right. And you experience these things at the level you experience them at, so you can be grateful on the other side of it. So you can experience life differently after it happens, you know, and food tastes better. You know what I mean? Like the wind feels better. You appreciate more sunsets, you know, you definitely recognize the difference from before to after, you know.
100%.
So did that play into you starting your own business?
It did. I was still working as a data engineer at the time, but I'd always had this inkling in the back of my mind. And I knew I'd regret it if I didn't. And so thinking back on that and just kind of what pushed me, it was that. It absolutely was that. I felt I had enough of a safety net with my wife and her role. And I just decided to take the jump. And it was like 2 years after, I think it was roughly 2 years after, but it was one of those things that was always in the back of my mind. I want to try this. I want to try this and I want to do something different. I want to be different. And I want to be better. And just all that stuff together over that course of that time period just really pushed me to be better and give me the go ahead and the confidence to move forward.
Yeah, after going through an experience like that, it's like, why not? What can hurt me now?
What do you got to lose? You know? Yeah.
like in terms of financial and business and everything, it really doesn't matter in the face of mortality. So it's like, well, I can take that risk, you know? I've had this other, 100%. You know. Yeah. That's awesome. That lets us finish this out perfectly. So the last question I always like to ask my guests, or last few questions, is what does legacy mean to you? And what legacy do you want to leave behind?
Oof. What does legacy mean to me? That was the first one.
What does legacy mean to you?
Legacy to me means leaving a larger impact in the world than when you came into it. And then what was the next one?
What legacy do you want to leave behind?
What legacy do I want to leave behind? The legacy I want to leave behind is, well, kind of comes down to my personal mission statement that I've been working on over the past few years. And my personal mission statement is to solve complex problems so that humanity progresses and benefits from solutions that leave a lasting mark on the unknown. So for me, it's about solving problems. It's about kind of shining some light on those unknown things. It's a very geeky, sciencey type of form for me, because it leaves that open to literally anything. So that's why I love it, because it doesn't matter what it is, as long as I'm solving problems and I'm kind of opening that door, even if it's just a little crack, so that other people can take a stab and see what's inside. I think that's the most important thing for me.
No, I love the answer, and it does. It fits you very well based on your history and the company that you're running now. It is a very nerdy answer, but I nerd out on all this stuff too, so I definitely resonate with that 100%. And I like the last part of it when it comes to the unknown, you know, so progressing.
Leave a lasting mark on the unknown.
Yeah, I love that. I love that piece of it. Well, Casey, I appreciate you coming on the show today. I'm glad we met through a Facebook group, and you provided a lot of value for our listeners, and you continue to do that on social media. So you guys can reach out to Casey on Facebook at Casey Luft, or on Instagram at k.luft. And then you guys have a pretty robust YouTube channel as well. Where can they find you there?
Yeah, just go to YouTube, type in Clientric, and you're going to come across us. I can guarantee you, you'll see my face everywhere there. So I look forward to you checking those videos and giving us some feedback on them as well. And if you're looking for more content around CRMs, we are always looking for ideas. So just let me know.
Fantastic, brother. Again, appreciate you coming on the show.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Doug. Appreciate your time.
All right, let's get building, y'all.